So
yeah, I certainly can struggle with the same thing of having my own judgment of how things should be and how somebody could upset me over me not having my way, you know, and recognizing that it's all made up. But it doesn't mean it's easy for me to forgive somebody for doing things their way.
So, you know, just on that note and several others from discussions we've had a week prior.
Yes.
I was going through some. I'm trudging back through some old 2008 Monday nights, which are no longer online, the recordings. But I'm really enjoying this. There's several things. One of the ones that I found this week. You guys remember how we were talking about the Me Too movement and what was going on, or how these, you know, we say these people created events in their life, and anybody who asks says, oh, hell no, I would never create an event like that in my life.
Right.
So, in this particular, it's just short, by the way, but Roger was saying the, he was talking about, well, he first told the story about Asatru. Anybody who's been around remembers that, but it's basically a guy who was, he felt like he had a great life he was supposed to have, but in India he was having kind of a life of a low caste person, and he wasn't too thrilled with that.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, basically what Roger was saying is that he was talking about cause and effect, and saying that the universe, the world around us, does not follow our cause and effect desires. Like, you know, if I do this, then I'll get this. If I don't do this, I won't get that. That kind of thing.
Right.
But it says that the life around is. The life around us is as we are. So regardless of what we say, it brought to my mind that I can say and do a lot of things, but if I'm in an environment of a certain, you know, belief and attitude and way, if it is, you know, then no matter what I do, it is as I am. No matter what I don't do, the world around me is as I am. So it, to me, it helped explain a whole lot about, to me, that was a good way to get across to people how you create things in your life without directly setting out to, oh, I'm going to cause this problem. You know, I'm going to do this or not do this and avoid these things. Because it has more to do with how you are fully, completely. Like, you want to call it on all levels. I know you wasn't fond of that set of words, but I'm just saying, to get the picture across, there's a lot more going on than what we think consciously we're doing. And I just thought that was a really eye-opening way to look at what's going on and why and how and what all is happening with events and people and things.
Well, that's very,
I just thought
it was very
cool. What's
and
that?
It just so happens that our last weekly meeting, we were talking about how people create an event.
I say, okay.
And that's exactly what you're talking about, that we create every event that occurs in our lives.
Yeah.
But
but I understand how it can be hard for people to sit there and say, I did not want this. I specifically did not want this, and yet it happened. What's that all about? I was trying to think of an illustration, and, you know, the best I could think of, this is not a good illustration, but I was picturing myself in a pool of black water, a pool of orange water, and a pool of clear water. And no matter what action I take in each pool of water, it's going to be black or orange or clear. Just no matter what I do, you know, no matter what actions I take or I don't take, it's always going to be sort of that color. So, you know, take a big step back and look at, sense how I feel, sense how I'm picturing the world, what my beliefs are, what story I'm telling myself, all that's part of it.
Can you explain how you can have orange, black, or yellow water, or whatever, and that's not you?
Oh, it is. It is me.
It is you.
What I'm saying is, most people are concentrating on what I'm, what, like, you know, me in my life. I'll just say it. I think about, I'm going to do this, to get that. I'm not going to do these things, so I won't have that. I'm focusing only on the actions. I'm not thinking about the environment in which I'm living and doing all that.
Yeah, well, what you're talking about is that they don't take into consideration all the constituents.
Correct. And there's a lot of constituents that are going on that comprise how we are, that are, for lack of a better word, beyond whatever we do or don't do. They're part of it. It's like asking a fish, how's the water? Fish have no idea how the water is. They're completely engulfed in it. They have no sense of the water around them. Anybody's better to, I put it out there for discussion. If I'm, describing this in a way that doesn't sit well, let me know, because I want a way to communicate this to people.
Well, I want to trade on Simone's little bit about the headmaster. It occurred to me that headmaster is a stand-in for God.
Yep.
And whatever the headmaster does or doesn't do, it's whatever headmaster does. But perhaps in Simone's world, he's God and she's pissed with what God's doing.
That's a fair assessment.
Well, definitely. She's in a universe that's considered the school. And he is God in that school, and she's got to realize that in that type of situation, she's subservient. And that makes her angry.
Me too.
Because she wants to be God anything.
I get your point about how to get it across to others, but it's so fundamental. That the whole view and image of the universe and how it functions in my mind dictates my experience of that universe.
So, Simone.
Yes.
What I've been working on is realizing that I'm wasting so much energy with being angry, and that I need to put that into looking at how I need to be instead.
Well, I would how get I rid of the word need and
me.
Go to desire.
Right. I need to manifest me. I need to look at what I need. Who am I? What is it I want?
You got
to
get rid of that word
that.
Need, Sharon. You got to get rid of that word
okay.
need.
Okay. All right. All right.
That's very much the point
Sorry.
Of what we're talking about. That's going to get you in trouble.
You got to go with desire. Because need
and that
puts you in a bad way.
Right.
Makes you needy.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's the causing and effect thing then. Yep.
Sorry about that.
No, it's not something to be sorry about. It's
a discussion we need to have.
We need to make sure that you understand
it's powerful. It's very powerful because it's that as long as I hold a world or a universe in which there is a figure that we can call God, then everything in my world is organized around that belief. Everything.
That's right.
To say that I can go do something, some behavior that might cause that to change is manifestly silly. I need to have a vision of the universe where there's no God, period. Zero, zip, no God. And then everything changes. Everything changes. So that unless I can find a way to see myself functioning in a universe where there is no God, I will always be slave to the God concept.
Absolutely.
I don't see how there's any way around that.
That's true.
Well, and God takes lots of forms, I'd like to point out, including cause and effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was important to me to have this discussion about those couple of pieces that I sent out, and I apologize, didn't really make it as clear as I might about what it was. The condition of godness is one that I thought set a context, and then the one that it says Monday discussions is extracted from stem cell stem cell. And it's all around discussion of who we are. And in the absence of getting really, really comfortable with a notion and image of who I am and each one of you are, then we're forged. We're fixing and repairing daily. And if you're a Northern Canada person, you like forage. That's the way it is. But
wait. Sorry, would you repeat that last part? You said that last, yes. And I missed everything after less.
Which part?
You're in Northern California.
Oh, I'm
really
sorry.
Ford
is F-O-R-D, and that we like to joke about that being a Ford is fix or repair daily. And that's what I'm saying, that unless you have a vision of yourself as a universal being, you're stuck with fixing or repairing daily, more than daily, all the time. You're always trying to fix what doesn't feel right. We end up being discontent because it doesn't feel right. And unless and until each one of us can generate that image wholly and completely of ourselves as universal beings, we're stuck with being flawed, never quite right, never this, never that. And we're always trying to find a way to feel better. And it's, I think forever living by itself without getting into the really deep stuff offers all kinds of ways to increase the quality of life of individuals. Superbly does a huge quality of life improvement. But still, it's trying to make this body life better. And I think I get kind of nerdy about this. It's kind of important to me, and so I wanted to go through this sequence here that was a condition of God now. It kind of sets a framework, and then I'd like to go through the excerpts that I found in Stem Cell, as to kind of lead some discussion that hopefully help each one of us have a clearer idea of what we're prepared to see ourselves as. And if that's okay, folks, I'd like to keep going on that.
Well, go for it.
Okay, starting with conditions of godness. You have a self-image, but you are not that self-image. You effectuate that self-image, and the self-image effectuated brings you alive. For without a self-image, though you have existence, you are not alive. The you that summons forth a self-image and in turn is brought to life by that self-image is an ego. But what is that ego? And we'll repeat that pattern right through this. But the emphasis here, you have a self-image. And it is you.
I wrote in the book here, the self-image, that's the condition within I operate.
That's true.
The self-image, I think we could say that.
Yeah.
And the important part is that you effectuate that self-image, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it brings you alive, and without it, you would not be it. You have existence. So you will not be alive. Effectuate means bringing, Karen asked that question, you might not have heard of it. What does effectuate mean? It means, according to Webster's, bringing into being.
Well, it can also mean putting into action, which is basically the same difference.
Yeah. So I thought that with Webster's being one of Roger's favorite reference books, but that was, if it did, we bring it into existence with effectuating. Before that, it's only an idea. We bring it into being, and being is in action. Yes. So we go through all that. You have an ego, but you're not the ego. You effectuate the ego. You have a body, but you are not that body. You effectuate the body. You go through all these things. You have a personal being, but you are not the personal being. You effectuate it. And it, in turn, is brought to life by that personal being is a privileged being. But what is the privileged being? So we go all through that kind of stuff.
And my question with it, reading that again, was, you know, why does he ask, but what is A? Each one he asks, but what is A? And then I'm not sure if, or in what way does he answer the question with the following passage?
Well, that's, and that's an excellent question. Because we go all the way through to a resplendent being, and you are not that resplendent being. You effectuate the resplendent being. And the illuminated being effectuated brings you alive, or without an illuminated being, you have existence, but you are not alive. The you that summons forth an illuminated being and in turn is brought to life by that illuminated being is a condition of godness. But what is a condition of godness? You're right, Andrew. What that question all along says that all of this is emergent. Every step along the way that life, you know, earlier on, and I couldn't find any direct reference in any of the written material, but Roger at one point in time talked about life waited until there was a safe and reliable place to become alive in on this planet. It was life that waited for that. In the words he used, and I like say, I looked for it. I couldn't find anything in writing that was published. Maybe Andrew can find it, or he can remember. So if
what
life,
was that?
Yeah, I was saying maybe Andrew could find that part where Roger said that life waited until there was a safe and reliable place to come alive in on this planet.
Oh, is that in Origins?
I don't think so. But that was one of our Monday meetings.
Okay.
Life is before everything, I recall just right now. Yeah. And life needs to be brought into a body that it can be effectuated.
Life pre-existed.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's, you know, second from last paragraph on the condition of God, it says, omni applied to God indicates all, complete, universal, without restriction. As a condition of godness, you are, not an if, you are a particular, self-declared, eternal personification of that universal. So it answers the question at the end there, what is a condition of godness? What is all that stuff? In the end, through that whole process of emergence, as a condition of godness, you are a particular self-declared eternal personification of that universal. That universal is life. So with that kind of background, I've been dwelling on this for some time now about the universality of it all, and that we are particular, self-declared, eternal personification. What does that mean? Well,
I wrote in the book, this means God in action.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Each one of us.
Yes, you are a particular self-declared eternal personification of that universal. This particular universal is God in action.
And in my image, there is no need for a God. I don't need I don't need to bring a God into it. It's just universal. There is, each one of us is a particularization of the universal. But that's my thing. That's the image I've developed. Okay, then I thought there was some stuff that may be greater clues about what Roger was telling us about who we may be by looking at stem cells.
Hey, Pat, before we move on to the next one, since you sent it, I recognize that since last summer, July, when we first read this, this seems to have been a passage for you. I mean, it really stuck. You've recalled it several times. What exactly did it do for you that hasn't come up before?
All of this is that in the condition of God in the sequence that I reproduced there, it all of a sudden, the whole provenance of myself came alive. It was just like, there's no longer any question that my whole provenance, that's who I am. It's not that these are separate, distinct things, not me. I saw that, of course, that's the way I took it. It was, this is my provenance. This is who I am. I am this particularization of the universal. And in this, the sequence starts. Remember, Roger talked about that sequencing is a way to understand how things work rather than cause and effect.
Right.
Sequencing is the way the universe works. And condition of godness outlines the sequence. And you're right. That just jumped out at me when I first read that. And
I don't see how condition of godness outpictures a sequence.
You have a self image, but you are not that self image. You effectuate that self image. The question always was for me, you. There was. When we talk personally...
But where is the sequence?
Can you hold on for just a sec? I'll try to explain what I'm thinking. Okay. That when we speak of personal being, or personal self and personal being, eternal self and eternal being, all that kind of self, those are discrete kind of things. And I had a hell of a time, you know, kind of identifying with that, and there was always somehow that was separate from my being. But in this, you have a self-image. I see that as the beginning of the particularization of the universal. I have a self-image, but I'm not the self-image. But I effectuate that self-image. And having effectuated that, the next piece in the sequence is an ego. And the next sequence, from the ego side of it, is the personal being. And the next piece in the sequence is a privileged being, and so on and so forth. As I effectuate, and remember, it's not path that's effectuating. What I'm talking about is the particularization of the universal sequences there. And we end up, whether it's awareful or not, we can end up as awarefully universal as a condition of God.
I have a question to support Simone's question. So are you saying that the sequence is self-image, ego, body, personal being, privileged being, resplendent, illuminated being?
I'm saying that as you effectuate them, what is emergent is the next.
Each one, yeah. So as I effectuate self-image, emergent is ego. As I self-effectuate ego,
yeah.
Emergent is body.
Yes.
As I effectuate body, emergent is personal being. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
As I effectuate personal being, emergent is privilege being, as I effectuate privilege being, emergent is resplendent, illuminated being.
Correct.
That's the sequence you saw in
this.
That's in
the sequence I'm referring to.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Simone?
I'm not sure.
It's an honest answer.
Actually, no.
Okay.
Because I had the image this night, I was also thinking about that. And suddenly the image came up of a circle. And all these images and beings are within the circle. And the condition of godness is the circumference of the circle. And so they do work all together, not one after another. So the sequence to me is one after another, but to me they do work together, all those images.
Well, I agree with you, but can you recall several weeks ago I sent you out to you guys a piece about the Theater of the Round, in which the center of the theater is where we will have a point of view or a focus, and that every bit of ourselves is in the theater, in the seats, and in the center of the stage, and it's all one complete thing.
It's all simultaneous.
It's all simultaneous.
Yes. Oh, that's the word.
Certainly.
I was looking. Yeah.
Certainly. But when we're trying to... What I'm trying to do is point out that, as Roger said here, it's not a cause and effect thing, but without a self-image, we're not going to have an ego. And without an ego, we're not going to have a body. That's what I think Roger was trying to point out. It's not that one causes the other, that these were things that as a particularization of the universal, you begin by having a self-image. That is this process of coming alive in a body. There is a particularization that occurs.
And that happens in the first 7 years. Did you hear me?
No, I didn't. Maybe I talked over you.
I said, and that happens in the first 7 years. Out of loner body and of gifted DNA stuff, you create your personal being, your self-image.
Mm-hmm. But all of that is emergent.
Sure.
As you do these, as you live, something is emergent. As you live, something is emergent.
But there is my not understanding of the sequence. Is sequence emergent? I'm not sure about that.
I'm trying to relate to what Roger said, that people say that, you know, that they want to live as an effect. And Roger at one point...
But it confuses me.
I beg your pardon?
It confuses me.
Well, Roger,
to me, I never understood sequence as emergent. Maybe that's what I didn't understand.
What if you said an illustration, to me an illustration of a sequence being emergent is, I plant a seed, the seed germinates. The seed becomes a germinating seed, and it becomes a small plant, then it becomes a big plant, then it has leaves, then it has fruit, etc.
Right.
And that's all emergent too, as Roger always said. You're not causing the corn to grow, but it is part of a sequence. And you can't have the corn without planting the seed and watering it and having sunshine and stuff. And this thing that Pat brought out, this condition of godness, each one says in turn is brought to life and then the next step.
And I see, the way I see that is, you got to have these somewhat in an ordered way, like I hadn't really looked at this before, but self-image in turn gives rise to ego, which in turn, because it says in turn right in the text there, gives rise to a body, in turn gives rise to personal being, in turn gives rise to privileged being.
Where?
The seed gives rise to the plant. While the corn plant is emergent, it does have to go in that order. You can't just stand in the middle and say, I'm going to have a plant without seed, water, sunshine, etc.
Well, that actually brings up a question that I had, Karen.
Yeah.
There was a number of times I heard him say, and this might, I mean, this, believe me, this is out of context, so this might not be inappropriate. But several times he said, in things we're talking about, it doesn't matter where you start on something. Like these passages, he wrote in passages, but the idea was you could throw them up in the air and reorganize them, and it would make a whole different kind of sense, but it would still all work. Now, that might not apply to what you're talking about, but as you were talking, I was thinking that
there is
a sequence, but it might not matter where you start.
So when you're talking about the corn plant, you can jump in anywhere and start talking about the corn plant and understand all kinds of things about the corn plant. But in this particular document, he's talking about how the corn plant comes into being. And that's where the sequence idea comes in. Like we can talk about any one of these things. We can talk about personal being endlessly and understand all kinds of stuff about it without having to bring body or privileged being or ego or self-image into it. We could just talk about personal being. Or we could talk about them in a different order, but if we wanted to understand the sequence of how it functions one to the other, I guess we got to put them in some kind of order.
Well, let's look at it from another twist of the view, and that is emergent. And in order for each one of those things, it has to have the constituent of the previous in order for it to exist. So it's only a continuation of emergent after emergent after emergent with a condition, you know, a constituent being added to it. You following what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
So in order for each one of those to occur, they have to have that constituent. If that constituent doesn't exist, the emergent does not occur.
Exactly.
So then what about Andrew's question about throwing all of the passages up in the air and then coming down in different order?
But this is not a passage.
Right. Okay.
Wait. Well, okay.
It's not
each of these were passages.
It's a different context.
Yeah, but when you put them all together into the emergence following emergence, that is not, each one of those is not a passage, unless you want to look at it as just a separate entity and you're only talking about that entity.
No, I see, because they begin at one point and they end at something specific. It's begin at resplendent, illuminating, and end at condition of godness, which wouldn't make sense to go into. You have a body.
Right.
Okay, I get what you're saying. I was just thinking about it, though.
To me, the I don't know if it is to the rest of you, but the most important factor I find in forever living is the idea of emergent. And as long as you keep that present in your mind at all times, it really helps you understand so much. In fact, you understand basically all of life.
I understand that. tremendous, Missy. That's tremendous, and that I'm glad Karen brought up the stuff about planting. You know, that you put a seed in the ground and you create and create an environment, add constituents. You can't stop the seed from germinating.
That's right.
If you have the constituents in place.
That's right.
And that's what, to me, that's what Roger referred to as sequencing.
That is.
That you can know what constituents are necessary for certain things to occur.
Absolutely.
So that's, to me, that you can't, from my point of view, when this piece that I labeled condition of godness, it's very limiting to dwell on any one of them, that each sequence, each constituent is extraordinarily important, and as you live those constituents, there are certain, he's written here, there are certain expectations about what might be emergent.
Well,
if you actually live the constituent.
That's right. But the whole thing is that people are constantly thinking that they are living the constituents to, quote-unquote, cause an emergent.
And, that's right.
And they aren't. Because they don't take into account all of the constituents.
Hmm.
They just think, well, I did that, so that should occur. Well, no, if you don't have all the constituents, that is not going to occur. Or if you have added constituents, that's not going to occur. So if I were trying to make, you know, water, and I had hydrogen, oxygen, and sulfur, I am not going to get water.
Yeah.
I would most likely get sulfur dioxide.
Actually, hydrogen sulfide. Acid.
Yes.
So to me that's why that sequence was so important, that, you know, that I continue to call it a sequence that was outlined in Condition of Godness.
And it's fine to call it a sequence.
Unless until you are living as a personal being, as a privileged being, as, then you will not experience the condition of godness.
That's right.
And all of this is what you experience. This, as we started the conversation a little earlier about all our beliefs, attitudes, and everything else, is going to condition what it is we experience in the life that we're living. And if you're not prepared, if we're not prepared to live each of these things, we'll never experience directly God, you know, condition of godness goes on without us.
Yeah, well, what he's always said is that you have to live these things into your life.
Yeah. Or you just simply won't experience them then.
Right. Unless you are actively living them, the next emergent will not occur. Because that's one of the constituents that must be there.
And whether or not you're doing the right thing, the good thing, or anything else is irrelevant. All it is are you prepared to live as a privileged being, or whatever?
Well, it isn't only that you are prepared to do it, but that you are doing it.
No, you're actually living it. I'm sorry. You're caught me.
Yeah.
You can be prepared forever, but unless you're doing it, you're not going to get anywhere.
That's absolutely correct. Now, the stuff on stem that I extracted from stem cell, kind of elaborates on some of those pieces of the sequence. and I'd like to go ahead with that part.
Okay.
You derive many benefits from your stem self as the very foundation of you. Stem selves are like past lives. They are yours, but they are not you, and you did not live them. You choose past lives to be the provenance of yourself. In the same way, you chose selves and tried them on to discover whether or not they suit you and benefit you and properly portray you eternally and universally as you truly desire. But you are not those selves, and you don't own them. You are not even the self you think you are. You are a universal being making yourself suitably particular and personally eternal. Or, of course, you can forsake yourself again to whatever happens. That one that just bounces out of the page at me and says, absolutely, that's absolutely the way it is. And it, again, that talks about you. That's universal. It's not the personal you. It's not the personal self or the eternal self. It's talking about the universal self trying
on. What does that mean to you? Do you have a sense or an experience of that?
Oh, absolutely. It's this. There's a real comfortable notion that is looking through my eyes the same time as Pat is looking through my eyes and seeing and experiencing everything that Pat is looking at. And it's trying it on for size. It's you know, Pat is doing all kinds of stuff. But these eyes, there's another set of eyes looking through my eyes that is not particularly, let's say, no, not reactive whatsoever to what's going on, but extraordinarily observant to what's going on.
Well, I've always
reactive at all.
Thought of that as, when I think about that, and I have, it's like I have a shared vision. Everything is not just me looking, it's a bunch of me's in different forms in whatever looking. The universal, the personal, the eternal, the whole shebang. It never gets lonely in there.
There's one piece here that maybe people can talk about, that you chose past lives to be the provenance of yourself. I chose samurai. The two really powerful ones were samurai and the ones I say was the last life that is the U.S. Army Navy or Army Air Force pilot, Parker.
Mm-hmm.
I chose those as a provenance to live in this life at this time. And to me, that there is this bridging of time and space and everything else that occurs when I realize that it's this you that I have never bothered naming yet, that is chose samurai and chose Parker to be a provenance of this life, this time. Because I don't even know what I'd like to say next about that, but it's just so clear to me now that I chose those. I realized I didn't live those. Like, Pat didn't live those. Neither did the you that we're speaking of here, the universal you. Just chose it. Let's see what it's like to have that as part of the provenance.
I just want to put out there, I can understand what you guys are saying completely. I understand what you guys are saying about another self, you know, participating or observing in all this. But the thing that I have not fully understood is, as like we go through that previous section, which one is that is looking through my eyes? Is it, or even is it something I can narrow down to, oh, that's the personal being, not the loner self, or that's the, you know? I've never gotten a handle on that.
Sometimes I feel like it would help me understand what we're talking about better.
Well, I think it's a fabulous question because, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I haven't yet given a name to this you that I sense looking through my eyes.
I thought you identified it as your universal self.
It's
which
my universal
surprised me because I wouldn't have gone that way.
Transcends Yagi, it transcends Parker, it transcends a Roman judge. It's if anything, to use language that we've used before in Forever Living, and it's the golden thread, that it is this universality, this particularization. It's just kind of really, really super to see it that way, and in a way, it's comforting, because things, as I think, I can't remember if it's quoted here, but from the universal particularization point of view, continuing is a non-issue. It's just a non-issue. Why would anybody even talk about that? As a universal, a particularization of the universal, why would I even be bothering talking about continuing? It's just a rock solid given. There is this, I remember Roger pressing me in latter years about whether or not I was comfortable with the notion that Pat disappears and that's it, goodbye sayonara. And I said, yeah, I'm actually quite comfortable with that, that's okay. I don't think he believed me for a long time, but this kind of process I was going through of realization that the focus that I had in this particular body was not serving me all that well, and that there was something else going on that I should get my head around, and I eventually got around to seeing myself as this particularization of the universal. And it answered the question of, as Misty said, that she's been aware of, that there's other eyes looking through her eyes, there's other observers looking through and participating in this thing that's not limited to this. How long do we have to be involved in this before we can involve other people in this? Like this whole idea that we're the particularization of the universe.
You're starting to fade on me, Pat.
Oh, I'm sorry. I leaned away from the phone. If I could jump ahead to what number 21 on the Monday discussion sheet. Living as a particular universal being begins with giving life to the eternal self you truly desire. Of course, this does not have to be a painful process. You made it. And I got lost here. You made it so. So that, to me, I quoted this or extracted this because it was important to see that living as I live as a particular universal being, I am giving life to then the eternal self that I truly desire. And it's the universal particular in living, we end up giving them some further particularity to what we've been calling the eternal self. And that doesn't have to be painful. We don't have to struggle. And as a matter, yes. You know, that we don't have to struggle. The next one, 22, I'm looking for guidance from everybody else about how to properly interpret this. Living as a particular universal being at this time is like turning the clock back in your life to become a new self. Just that part, without reading any further. Andrew, what do you think that means?
I'm pondering still. Can I come back to me, yeah?
So I'm not hearing you, Andrew. Did anybody else have any thoughts on what that particular passage means?
Okay, well, to me, it means that you look through to life with renewed eyes and get all the bullshit and stuff out of the way where you've been living as a cause and effect type person. Did I lose everybody there?
Yep.
Was enthusiastic, yes.
Well, read it again and let me make sure, because I don't have the copy in front of me. Unfortunately, my printer's not hooked in.
Okay, living as a particular universal being at this time is like turning the clock back in your life to become a new self.
Right. So if you are living fully the universal being, it brings you back to the time when you came into this life without all the garbage.
Okay.
You drop away all the stuff. And you begin life basically anew. The beginning again.
That's where I came in. I was thinking of this more as begin again is like a fresh new start. It's like turning the clock back. You haven't actually turned the clock back. You haven't lost anything.
No.
But you have a whole new.
It gives you a whole new view.
Look at all of it.
Yeah, everything is new.
Everything prior is particularized in a new way. So it's like turning the clock back to a new start.
It's like turning it back, but it's not turning it back.
Yes.
I wrote.
So that passage continues, do you have a soul self? And it answers no. A true self or ego is you as a universal being, and everything around you is created by you, for you. Everything around you is created for you as a universal being.
Right. Well, basically, Roger used to say that soul is basically synonymous with ego.
Mm-hmm. And that is a particularization.
Yeah, everybody wants to make ego bad ever since, Freud or whatever his name was. But it's not. It's the thing that drives your life.
And then moving ahead on passage 32, your loner self is the framework upon which and from which you can form your personal self, eternal self, as a resplendent, illuminated being. So he's in 32, he's outlining some of the constituents involved. In living, and as you live, those constituents, and there comes that the loner self is a framework that we can work with in order to live first, and it's hard to say it in any other way, first as a personal eternal being, and emergent is a resplendent illuminated being. There is always this sequence he speaks of, that we first become aware of personal being, and then we can awarefully live something else. Is it asking too much of you to consider your stem self, which you are forming and embodying over and over again, an abiding emprise that is creating you? And that's the same you that came alive as a universal particular being. And so he's asking, is it too much to consider that your stem cell, and again, in the context of that article, that we got the stem cell, that's the starter cell, which you are forming and embodying over and over again, as an...
Is there a word missing there, Pat?
What's that?
Is there a word missing there? Is it too much to ask of you to consider your stem self, comma, which you are forming and embodying over and over, comma, and abiding empire? So if I took the commas out, if I took that middle clause out, then is it too much to ask, is it too much, is it asking too much of you to consider your stem self an abiding emprise that is creating you?
That makes more sense by dropping, it's clearer when you drop.
I thought maybe there was a word missing, like is or something.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not saying that, maybe not is. Maybe there's no word missing.
So in a sense, in the overall, the arching statement here is that we are, the stem cell, we are forming and embodying over and over. It's not a matter of there, I got a stem cell, I'm done. We're doing it, informing it over and embodying it over and over and over again. And is an abiding emprise that is creating it. You did not come to life to learn, grow, develop, and to evolve and unfold yourself. You came to life to renew, reveal, and advance a new way to live as a particular universal being without loss or lessening as universal.
I love that one.
Yeah. Is that too difficult or too unusual to consider? So to me, that it's like, this is, it's almost like the vision I sometimes come up with the ear, it's like an artesian well. It keeps on flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing. And that's what we're doing. We're forming and embodying over and over. And came to life and we're renewing, revealing, and advancing a new way to live as a particular universal being without loss or lessening of yourself as universal. So it's that never-ending creation, expansion of the universe. So, number 80 I selected. Kind of begin rounding this off. Life is not about freeing yourself of mortal beliefs, conditions, and actions to live an unknown, everlasting self in life. Life is about communing personal and eternal to emergent, a resplendent, universal self and life you truly prefer. You are not a manifestation of God. You are manifesting a condition of Godness wherever you are. Your every action is a transfiguration of that. And, I put it at the end. Is it possible for you to consider that as a universal being, continuing is irrelevant?
Sure.
So I wanted to share with you guys how important it was that these features, a lot of the details, in a sense, don't matter that much. Living them, each one of us is going to find the way we will or will not live these principles, these features. But in the absence of these, this very fundamental stuff, we may not fully understand what he was trying to tell us. So thank you for your attention, and thank you for allowing me to talk about this stuff.
I think that's an important thing to go over, and anybody that has some of that stuff that they feel like they would like to share and express again and get firm, because a lot of times it becomes more a part of us the more we discuss these things and the more we help others to see how we see doesn't mean they will accept it, but to see what we are seeing. I think that's very important.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, and Roger, I think Roger always said, you know, I'm telling you, in my opinion, this is what's going on, but I want you to have it how you think it is.
And that's why I think it's so important to have these discussions.
Did he say that?
Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay, if he said that, because I don't recall that, then why was there so much, I don't know harangue about how we get what he's saying?
Because he wants you to see it. It was just like the same thing that I did, and we talked about this. It was like when I went to dental school, and they said, you have to understand it the way we're teaching it, just so that you understand it. Then when you get out there on your own, you can do anything you want with it. But I want you to see it the way we see it and learn it the way we're teaching it. That was very important to Roger, that at least you could see it.
I understood Pat to be saying something slightly different than that. Roger didn't care how we saw the world, the universe, our existence. You're saying he didn't care how we saw what he was.
He didn't.
Yeah, if he hammered us if we said this is what you said, he'd say, if you're going to quote me accurately, goddammit. But if you want to do something with what I said, I want to make sure you understood what I said.
Yeah. Now, if you said this is my
truth, you want with it.
Yeah.
He'd understand what I said.
Yeah, you can say this was my take on what you said, and he would be fine with that. But if you said this is what you said, and you didn't say exactly what he said, that would upset him. Yes.
Yes, quite. And so that,
Misty, I just sort of add to what you said that I would encourage all of us that are on the call to do what I did in some form or another. Take the things that are most important to you that arise out of this stuff that you feel is at the core of your understanding and share it with us. This is the only way it'll be alive for each one of us, is if we take the time to say, this is what I think it means. And it's really important to me that, and I think we've talked about it before here, as us six that are still talking about it, it's important that we had a kind of a common understanding of what he was talking about. And what we do with it is up to us. But if we can't answer questions kind of consistently about what the six of us kind of figure he was talking about, then it's just going to drift off all over the place. It will in one way or another anyway, but if the origins, this book has got so much wisdom in it that if we don't have kind of a common understanding of what we think he meant by it, I don't know, it's really useful that we do this.
I agree.
I would agree. I'm gonna confess to you guys, like you said, I have a very difficult time speaking specifically about this, simply because, like I say, I sometimes don't know where to plant myself as a point of reference when talking about it. Meaning, like I asked tonight, and based on some of the things that you read, I didn't know if the universal being was something that I am experiencing behind my conscious eyes, or, and unconscious, I just mean a wakeful, normal awareness, or is it something else? I can't tell you from these descriptions, and so it does make it difficult for me to speak consistently about it with you guys. I would very much like to, and I'm not able to, I have to say.
Well, that do you have any image at all when he speaks about a universal being particularizing and coming alive in your body. Do you have any image of that at all?
Okay. I could create an image of that. I don't care about what I can create. I really want to know what he was talking about. So I can create one. Just didn't know if I'm tracking what he's saying.
We'll take the parallel with it, which is the stem cell. Is the stem cell still there when it turns into a liver cell?
I guess in a different form it is.
Okay. So the basics of what it was as a stem cell is still there, and then some stuff, right?
Yeah. Mhm.
And I think the same thing is true with the universal. Okay? When it becomes a living being, it's still there and then some. And I think that if you just keep the parallels going with some of these things, that's the reason why he put it as stem cell. He wants you to keep that going so that it keeps you understanding what is occurring. Can you take away all the things that are in a cell and turn it back into a stem cell? Yes, you can. Can you take
a
person and take away all the stuff and turn it back into a universal self? Yes, you can.
Yes.
Does that help at all?
Okay. All right. Well, okay. This is not to be difficult. This is to say, I really want us to be very intellectually honest about what we're saying. So the thing that I think I'd say from that is, if you know what a universal self is, yeah, it might help. As you said it right then, I imagined a universal self to be something like so universal as to be non-personal. It could be everybody. That might not be what he's talking about. I don't know.
He's talking about a process of particularization of the universal.
And so to answer your question, yes. It's that. Back that far. Just as a stem cell is back to its nothing in particular. But it is a cell. The universal self is nothing in particular, but it is a self.
An accumulation of data and information?
Well, it's data information, yes.
Yeah.
But it's not totally personalized. But it is a self.
No, it's not.
In a cell, it becomes particularized. In a universal, it becomes personified.
Right.
You missed it.
Yeah.
I don't recall Roger ever talking about any of his view or image of his particularization until it had become quite particular, and that he told us the stories of Metatiya and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, I don't think he ever talked about the nascent self that came alive somewhere for Roger.
I think that that's true.
And by the way, whatever you're doing, I haven't had you this loud on the call forever. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it, please.
And that's because I'm sitting up very straight right over the phone.
Oh. Super, oh. Thank you.
So, does that help at all, Andrew? I mean, you don't have to say yes. And I will try to explore other ways.
I can't say yes.
Yeah, well, I'll think about it and see if I can't come up with other ways to help alleviate your confusion.
Well, what'll happen is, here's what I think happens is, I'll ask you guys a question. We'll say, which self? What do you mean? Well, whatever it is. And somebody will say, oh, I mean this. And that's an understanding for me of how you're looking at it. But I still don't know how Roger meant it when he wrote it. Because there were just so many times when we would say what we thought, and he could come in from, like, I swear, center field, left field, you know, behind the plate. I had no idea where he was coming from, and he had a course correction for us that was, you know, important.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to get that now. So it's a little hard for me to take us at our word, myself included.
Well,
hey, I got a suggestion.
Go ahead.
And that, Misty, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sitting
that
back.
There is, what, Andrew, what would you want it to be?
Oh, there we go. That's a totally different take. And in that, we may end up with very different views, all of us, including different view from what Roger had.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is about, Patrick, that's about the only, what I'm going to call defensible way, supportable way, I think we can do that, simply because if you can explain how you're talking about it, I will understand that that's you 100%. But I cannot, if I challenge any of you guys on whether what you're saying is what Roger is saying, I think, to be honest, we have to say, I don't know.
Well, what
I say is you
have to always say, this is my take on what Roger said. That's all we can do at this point.
Right.
Okay. That helps
and
a lot.
I think,
right.
I also think that's what he always wanted.
I don't think that's what he wanted.
I think he wanted us to see it his way.
Hmm?
What?
Go ahead, Simone. What?
Oh, I think he introduced something and then said, make your own opinion about it and make it real for you. And we cannot copy him. That's not possible. But I can decide how I want to take on how I want it.
I think really important. I think Simone's absolutely right, that he wanted us to be our own authorities. Otherwise, we would be making him into God.
Yeah, he didn't want us regurgitating.
Said,
yeah.
He
didn't want us regurgitating, you know,
nope.
Rote memorization.
See, I thought he did.
No.
I seriously thought he wanted us to see it his way. And then, as you say, we can talk about it any way we want to. But I got it was very important for him that we see it the way he was seeing it.
He wanted
you
to...
Without that, we could be very different places in our understanding.
He wanted you to have the basic idea of what he was saying, yes. But he did not want us to be little robots regurgitating what he said.
I think that was all.
Do you mean he was repeaters, or what? What is that expression?
Regurgitate true word of what regurgitate means is to vomit, but what that means is saying verbatim what he said. Word for word.
And I think really if we did that, we would be making him into God, and he didn't want to be God.
No, he really
did
not.
And when he was talking, he was getting mad at us and, you know, it was because we weren't understanding what he was saying. It's not that we were believing it. He always said, if you see it a different way, then speak up. Tell me all about it. He wanted us to have the same skills at describing the universe we saw, the way we saw it, as he did. And that was where it all fell apart, because we none of us had the same skills he had with the words. But I really do think Simone's quite right that he didn't want us to just say to believe what he believed. He ultimately wanted us to know what we believe.
Find out about, his inputs.
He basically wanted to give us a bunch of constituents and let us have our own emergence.
Right.
That's
a good image. That's a good way to
Because we are going to anyway.
I heard him say always he never wanted to be a guru.
Yes, that's true.
He didn't want to be a god.
Or you called it God, yeah.
Right. Well, what else would it be? Like we started the conversation, you know, your headmaster is a god. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And he wouldn't want us to be, reproducing that pattern in our lives. But at the same time, when he was running a show, he was running a gathering, it was his show, and he had the right to say, this is what I'm saying, and if we're going to discuss what I'm saying, you understand what I'm saying. Don't turn it into your own thing.
It's absolutely a whole different concept.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and so that's all I'm saying is, as we're discussing this stuff, that's my difficulty. Just sometimes don't know exactly what he meant by these different parts.
But we'll do our best to help
if
you
I
along
had
the
that,
way.
If I had that, I feel like we could follow it. If everybody knew, oh, you're seeing and perceiving with, you know, this self, and the one that you sense behind it is that self, and the ones you don't sense yet because you haven't lived those constituents are these self, you know, then that would help a lot.
Yeah, I keep my picture with a circle. That's my image. And my take on all these images.
All right.
And that we've,
I'm aware that it is an emergent process. So they have to work together and build each time new constituents when I add something somewhere.
Yeah, in the absence of that kind of image, that we're studying and trying to learn.
I think we're trying to understand ourselves.
And that's the only part that matters to me.
Yeah. How we act and how we are part of the game, and let's say in my case now, or in my situation.
Even Sharon drew a good part of the evening. Are you still on, Sharon?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm just muted listening.
Oh, good. I just didn't hear. How are you?
Very tired.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay.
So does anybody else have anything to say on this subject?
Yeah, I have a question for you, Patrick.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, I was looking up the article about stem cells, and I was looking it in my binders, but I couldn't find it. And on the website, I saw that it's 23 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And so, were those the articles or the paragraphs that were most important for you to understand stem cells, or how did you select?
I was, Steve. From the point of view of what added to, from how we came alive and what occurs as we live and what is emergent. That's the screen I used to select what would add. The one that was started it is the condition of godness, and that went through what I call a sequence. Then I went through stem cells to see what would further give information to each of those steps, and it ended with, you are a manifestation of the condition of godness. Your every action is a transfiguration of that. So that's out of self. So I thought those all kind of filled in whatever gaps there might be in condition of godness, the sequence there.
Yeah, I didn't see the connection between the two. What I wrote you, the condition of godness, is written several pages in the same book as we are reading.
And as Andrew pointed out, that when we were in Hawaii last July, that jumped out at me, and like, holy Dinah, is that ever neat? That really grabbed me at that time. I grabbed it.
Okay.
And it's prominent in my thinking since then. And I don't recall lifting it out of Origins and taking away the passage numbers. Misty, are you aware that ever showed up before without passage numbers? I must have done it then, but I just don't remember doing it.
No, there are always passages. Yeah.
Then I must have taken the passage numbers off of it when I reproduced it. Okay.
You just have to do a search to find out where they were. If that's important to you.
Actually, Simone identified where they were really quick.
I can tell you.
Yes. And
it starts in the book.
Yep.
Page 165. How things must be is the title from this. From this paragraph, and the first you wrote is 21, and it goes until 27, 26, on the next page, 166.
Okay, so there you have it.
Yeah, but my question was, the connection between condition of godness and the stem cells, how he did select that.
And my answer...
It's okay.
Okay, does that answer the questions?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else have anything to say?
Nope.
Okay, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to end it tonight, because I don't think that we should go on to a new topic, though it is relative, but I think that I'm going to just let that one sit where it is and let it be a separate entity. And then
super duper. Thank you, Misty, for
next week we'll start on K.